Firstly, I want to tell you how good, how excited, how enthusiastic I feel about this church, about Unitarian Universalism. I feel great. I consider myself blessed to be here. Now, things are not always easy or comfortable, but it's good. I feel alive. I'm growing, evolving, stretching in ways that I hadn't thought of before. It's called learning, growing, changing. To be clear, the learning process is not warm, comfy, or cozy. Stuff inside is stirring. Old ideas and assumptions undergo contentious examination. New understandings emerge. The mind is clicking. The heart is pumping. The juices are flowing. It's a meta kind of thing. And to keep up with my inner self, I had to take my outer self to the gym. As I was preparing for today, I kept thinking about storytelling, the importance of narrative in our lives, and how to intersperse stories in the sermon to share a bit of my life with you. Further, I'd like to preface Music is Life by sharing some things to help set the context for this homily. On Tuesday, I was feeling really great. Things were falling into place. I was deep in thought on a lot of different things. And the phone rings. Reverend Don says cautiously, "Well, how do you feel about Sunday?" I said, "Great, they enjoyed the food." He was quiet. "Well," so I said, "well, everybody liked my outfit." More silence. So I told him, "I got a bunch of compliments. Evelyn noticed that my sandals match my dress. Mr. Snow's daughter said I looked just beautiful coming down the chancel steps. And several women even commented on my accessories." Stunned silence. "You know how my vintage earrings and the peach color purse just knocked it out." He stammered, "I better go pack." Life is music. Music is life. This rather begs two questions. What is music and what is life? The first question requires enlisting the knowledge base of ethnomusicologists like Adam over there. And maybe next year he'll give the sermon on Black Music Month. The second suggests that we speak to some biologists or philosophers. What is life? Well, the sermon is only 20 minutes long, and this route would take about 20 months of circular academic discussion, and most of us wouldn't make it through the first plenary. So I consulted the good old Oxford Dictionary, and let's just agree that music is humanly organized vocal or instrumental sounds, or both, combined in such a way as to produce beauty of form, harmony, and expression of emotion. Life? Life is the existence of a human being or animal, a condition that includes the capacity for growth, functional activity, and change preceding death. In other words, you have life till not. I liked one essay in Philosophy Now that asked, or is the real question, what is the meaning of life? Now that's a tough one. The author goes on to say, but I think that the meaning of life is the ideals we impose upon it, what we demand of it. I've come to reaffirm my Boy Scout motto, in a few words, that the meaning of life is to do good, be good, and to be able to receive good. The foggy term in my advice, he wrote, is good, but I'll leave that up to all the intuitive powers that we share. It made me think, what then is good music? That's as different as there are different people. But one writer said, music moves people, it creates community, it improves mental health, and makes people happier and healthier. And I thought about that when Elizabeth told the kids, when you share music, you feel good. That's a good thing. Stevie Wonder, that famous psalmist, said, music is a world unto itself with a language we all love. Now, Black Music Month. June is officially known as Black Music Month. Former President Jimmy Carter created Black Music Appreciation Month back in 1979, and it is annually reestablished by presidential proclamation. This year, President Biden succinctly expressed the sentiment behind Black Music Month, and I'll read a few excerpts. Music has the power to lift our spirits, comfort our souls, and inspire our hearts. It gives voice to the human spirit, creating a common language that unites people and breaks down barriers. Perhaps no music has had as profound and powerful effect in shaping America's musical score as Black music. For generations, Black music has conveyed the hopes and struggles of a resilient people. Spirituals mourning the original sin of slavery and later heralding freedom from bondage, hard truths told through jazz and the sound of Motown through the Civil Rights Movement, and hip-hop and rhythm and blues that remind us of the work that still lies ahead. The music created by Black artists continues to influence musicians of all persuasion, entertain people of all backgrounds, and shape the story of our nation. Those are wonderful words. But some might still want to ask, just what is Black music? What makes music Black? The Center for Humanities at Washington U in St. Louis sponsored a summer-long program for secondary school teachers entitled, What is Black Music? At the close of the experience, one participant wrote, we struggled with the question of how to define Black music and with the question of whether the term was meaningful or not. He went on to state, the term Black music does have meaning because Black music has a specific history, a rather complex history that has required and still requires much study and thought to articulate, and a history that is yet unfolding. Black music exists not because of some innate biological traits that accompany skin pigmentation and somehow express themselves musically, but instead, Black music is Black music because of the material conditions that such pigmentation has been associated with in America and over the centuries, slavery, segregation. Dr. Gerald Early is a professor of English and of African American and American Studies at the same school. He directed the program. He said, it's important to remember that Black music doesn't mean just one kind of music. There are multiple streams of Black music, which might be usefully divided into sacred and secular. And there's also the history of Black people playing European music and of Europeans playing Black music. It really is impossible to identify the race of a musician simply by listening to the music. So in that sense, it's true that music is music and race has nothing to do with it. But to leave the discussion there ignores all of the cultural realities and the history that are so central to why music matters to people in the first place. I had a long quote from Toni Morrison, and I thought better of it, but Toni Morrison raises the issue when she speaks to these cultural realities and histories in an essay she did. It was actually a speech she presented entitled Unspeakable, Unspokable, Unspoken and Unspeakable. And what she bemoaned or made a point of saying was that for 300 years, and you know, the first Africans arrived here in 1619. And for the next 300 years, African Americans made a point of saying, race doesn't matter. I'm the same as you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And she said, for those same 300 years, in the academic world, every discipline, theology, natural science, literature, every discipline was busy establishing firmly that race does matter. Race, you know, that there is a difference. And now that she makes the point that now that Black people have established a culture, have established a self, our own self-worth, now suddenly race doesn't matter. Oh, I don't see race. No. It doesn't matter at all. And today I want to talk about Black music from the perspective of its relevance to you and first you today. If you're alive, remember we mentioned life, change is part of that life. Growing is changing. If you're living, you are changing, you're developing, you're changing. And when you stop, you are no longer here. Change is a process of life. Churches, like all other organizations, institutions, are challenged to accommodate the present and prepare for the future. I spoke last week with a member who is no longer a member of the church, or no longer attends. He said the services are not inspiring, and he finds no hope here. They'll never change, he said. If they lived the seven principles in the first place, there would be no need for an eighth. And you really can't argue the truth of that. And not just in terms of the UU, but in terms of America, the world. If you take a cursory look at the pages of the UU website, the emphasis on change is striking. The domain where change is most challenging is with respect to race, diversity, and inclusivity. In one UU World article entitled Change from the Inside Out, it flatly says, for the last 5 years, the Unitarian Universalist Association has focused on unprecedented, widespread cultural transformation to eliminate systemic racism and white supremacy culture, both within the association and within Unitarian Universalists. An informed discussion of Black music and Black culture may help deepen understandings about Black people. Some people have queried, why are Black African Americans so Christian? Well, the roots lie in our history. The very music, Black music, has its roots in sacred music. You know why? Because when Black and when Africans, who are, and we're the only non-immigrants, we didn't, you know, Africans didn't migrate. And when we came, we were shorn of family, society, everything that makes a human culture, community. That the only thing we had was music and dance. And that's what we did, even in, as enslaved people. The roots of Black music lay in sacred music, which evolved as spirituals and later gospels. The secular train, the music that came from the same base, because at first it was just called slave music. Slave music was music that you know, picking that cotton, and everybody singing, picking that cotton. And then Black people, Africans didn't come here as Christians, but slave owners were Christians. And the only outlet a slave had was to come to church, come to the white man's church on a Sunday, and then if you were really good, you picked all that cotton, you could have your own church or your own gathering. Sometimes they called that a revival because it revived their spirits to be able to get together, to sing, to exalt one another, to encourage one another. From 1619 to 1908, the slave trade thrived, and slavery itself ended in 1665. But those slavery kind of conditions have existed long past that. In fact, my sister and I, our family went, we recently visited Dismal Swamp. Dismal Swamp is in Virginia, and it had a Maroon community. It had a community of slaves who had freed themselves and got away somehow, and they lived with Native people. I don't recall the name of the tribes, but they lived deep in the swamp. And as slaves were used to come and empty the swamps, and then they would steal away. But people lived, the Maroons lived in that Dismal Swamp until 1950. For most African Americans, a longstanding, and I don't mean we have now different generations, not different, different types. We've got African Americans who are Nigerian, who are Ghana, who are, you know, the new, who have immigrated and don't share the same experience as people who are descended from those who were enslaved. For most African Americans, descendants of enslaved people, religion and music are tied together. Upon their involuntary relocation, well, in many parts of the American South, it was illegal to teach the enslaved to read and write. And if they became literate, usually the Bible was the only book available to them. Slave songs evolved into spirituals, and often the lyrics had double meaning. When Africans were introduced to Christianity, and at one point in Virginia and in some other states, if you became a Christian, then you were allowed to work your way out of slavery, that in the early time of slavery. They applied these new, when Africans were introduced to slavery, to Christianity, they applied these new stories and images to their own experiences. But their version of worship and of Christian doctrine differed sharply from that of the slaveholder. Sunday morning services were organized and mandated by the white slave owners, and the sermons exhorted slaves to, "Servants, obey your masters." Clandestine Black-owned services were held in cabins or out on the land, out of the sight of the owners. and featured Black preachers who led singing, dancing, and praying well into the night. The worshipers developed signals to alert each other to such meetings. They might steal away out of slavery because Harriet Tubman was running her railroad. Some slave owners allowed and encouraged gatherings when there was no need to hide. The singing and praying would become quite loud. Now, I know y'all passed the Holiness Church. Once again, the former Africans were singing and dancing as a group to build courage and hope that they needed to sustain themselves under a brutal, dehumanizing system. This morning, Adam played a spiritual for the prelude, Deep River. And these are the words, the lyrics. And this is a very old song. It's probably 200 years old. Deep River, my soul is over Jordan. Deep River, Lord, I want to cross over into campground. Now, this, if someone's singing Deep River, my home is over Jordan, that didn't necessarily mean they wanted to die. It meant that perhaps there was a river separating the Mason-Dixon line. There was a river that, you know, literally. And so there's all this double entendre in spirituals. My home is Deep River. My home is over Jordan, River Lord. I want to cross over into campground. Don't you want to go to the gospel feast, that promised land where all is peace? Deep River, Lord, I want to cross over to the promised land. Like all spirituals, Deep River is a song of hope and longing. It expresses a desire for peace and freedom, both in the present and into whatever comes afterwards. Through these songs, the enslaved held on to the hope of survival. Campground implies a place for camp meetings. No one's going hiking, roasting, you know, having a barbecue. It was a type of meeting, even though it was illegal, it served as a vehicle for slaves to commune and share their sorrows and hopes. These camp meetings were among the rare occasions where the enslaved could actually experience feeling free, feeling joyous for a little while through singing, playing instruments, and sharing stories. These gatherings were often overtly Christian and were called revival meetings. They were extremely common in the late 19th century and the early 20th by both Black and white people. That when I talk about at one time in my life, I was living in South Africa and I was going to mosque and I was enjoying being part of that community. Then I started attending the Brahmin Kumaris. They're a meditation group. And I found fulfillment. I was happy in those places. But I thought about where my people came from. And that's why I am a Christian, because my great, great, great grandmother picked cotton in Mississippi, because that is what sustained my people. When I was in South Africa, I met a gentleman in a rural area, and he said something to me in Xhosa. And when I didn't respond, he said, "Ah, you're a Negress." I was like, "Well, I guess so." I hadn't heard that before in my life. He said, "I admire your people, You were slaves. Now look at you. In the days of apartheid, we would read your books. James Baldwin, Ralph Ellison, letters from a Birmingham jail. They were banned, illegal. If you were caught with those books, you went to jail. I buried mine in tins in the ground. Huh? A book garden. They gave us hope, those books. It's good to see you. You were a slave. It's good to look, and look at you now. Look at me now. I'm almost a Unitarian. Here, I wanted to give Cheryl Wagner a shout out. And I hope that she's in the Zoom world. One Sunday she baked muffins, dozens of delicious homemade muffins. I'm a baker, so we chatted, and she told me she was a pagan. Now, it's not every day I meet a pagan, and this made an impression. So Tuesday was June 21st, the summer solstice, the day I was feeling so good. And so I Googled and found an interesting website. The blogger wrote, "The solstice reminds us there's hope in the world, that the light within can spread to the far reaches of the globe and inspire others." The website was called Spiritual Gangster. That made me laugh, because in South Africa, I was always accused of being a gangster because I was from Chicago. And so one day, even at church, before a meeting of the ministers and the deacons, I noticed some commotion over in the corner. And so I asked the deacon, "Okay, you lead us in prayer." He got up and said, "There's a matter we must consider, Pastor Monica." And then he looked around and said, "Pastor Monica is from Chicago. No, from America." And people went, and City of Gangsters, Al Capone, Chicago. So the question we must interrogate, is she a gangster? Is she a spiritual gangster? So when I saw the website was Spiritual Gangster, that reminded me again of that kind of that experience. In closing, I just like to say, when you make your transition from this earth and you are from this life and you are floating around in the ether or wherever your belief system takes you, and your consciousness senses the sound of music in the afterlife, Aretha Franklin singing Freeway of Love, and slowly your consciousness perceives a pleasing round caramel hued divine presence floating nearby in a gorgeous outfit, matching shoes and vintage earrings, smiling in a pink Cadillac, digging the scene with a gangster lean. You will travel through space and time and say, "I remember her, and we manifest you." And I'll say, "Bless you."